Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me, as always, is Luca. Luca, we have not done many shows together where the Bills are on a two-game losing streak, but that's where we find ourselves tonight after the Bills lose again, this time in walk-off fashion to the Houston Texans by a score of 23-20. How are you doing tonight?
Not great. I mean, I think that's an understandable way to start this. Speaking of, you know, us doing stuff since we started this whole thing, two-game losing streaks, the feeling is somewhat similar for a lot different reasons, of course, but somewhat similar to the one that comes to my mind, Josh, where we lost to the Jets and then turned around and had that wonderful, air quotes if you're watching, Minnesota loss at home. And then it was just kind of a, well, what the hell do we do from here? Like, it feels like things are just not going your way and such. And yeah, it was a very miserable feeling right after the game. And it's not like it progressed much better or in a much more positive direction. I would say from something you tweeted out right before we went live, or since we started recording here, you're in a worse mood than I am. But overall, I'm still not in a great one myself. I'm going to try to be a beacon of light wherever possible here, Josh. I at least have other things that are great outside of the Bills situation here. But let's be realistic. The Bills thing sucks. And I'm just going to be, again, I'm going to try to be even keel here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to be the level-headed, level-minded individual in the room so that you can kind of express the way you're feeling right now, Josh, without it feeling like we're just being two emotional disasters behind a mic here. So feeling exactly like that, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. You know, here's the thing. I think I do a pretty good job, at least when I'm on the air, of compartmentalizing football. And, you know, I root for this team. Like many of you, I love this team. My emotional well-being on Sundays or Mondays is very much tied to whether the Bills win or lose, like many of you can relate to. But, you know, I don't let it carry over to me being a dad or a husband or a friend or whatever like that. But Luca and I have been doing this show for, you know, a little over 2 years now. And we've done some pretty depressing post-game shows. He mentioned that Minnesota game, that overtime where Josh Allen throws interception to Patrick Peterson, that Jets game where Josh Allen got hurt. We've done the Bengals playoff loss. We did the Kansas City playoff loss last year. You know, so we've had some depressing ones, but I will say, Luca, that generally speaking, by the distance of time from the game ending to us talking, I've generally been able to like get past that initial anger and just kind of formulate my thoughts to the point where we can have, you know, a productive show and really convey to the audience what happened and where we go from there. We are now, it is 10:20 as we're recording this. The game ended like 6.5 hours ago. And I'm telling you, Luke, I'm still in a really bad mood. And I think there's multiple layers to this game. You and I were talking off the air that if you had told me last week that the Bills were going to lose by a field goal to the Texans on a walk-off field goal by Kami Fairburn at the buzzer, I would be like, all right, you know, whatever, that's fine. They're down a bunch of dudes. This week they lost Shakir and Ed Oliver. I can totally see a world where that game plays out and the Bills come up a little bit short and we're fine. But then when you watch the game and you add it on to what we saw in Baltimore, I think there are some big picture conversations we need to have. And then there's some game management conversations we have. I feel like, Luca, what I'm going to do right now is there's multiple things we need to talk about tonight. And here are the main things we're going to get into. One, we absolutely have to talk about that last sequence by the Bills, how they handled getting the ball back with a chance to either go down and try to score to win it, run out the clock, and what they did in that scenario. We also have got to talk about the situation with the Bills passing game right now. What is ailing this team where Josh Allen goes 9 for 30 for 131 yards and a touchdown? I know Khalil Shakir was down, but we're going to have a larger conversation about the pass weapons. I do want to set aside some time tonight to talk about trades. I think that's on a lot of people's minds. What's a realistic trade idea? Can the Bills get Devontae Adams? Can they get Amari Cooper? Are there other names out there that would interest us? Romeo Doubs was a guy that came up in the news this week. I don't think he's going to be on the trade block, but I'm of the mindset right now that there are no bad ideas, although the Bills are not in the best cap shape. And I do think we need to have a conversation about coaching on this team, both offensive coordinator Joe Brady and Sean McDermott. But Luca, I'm going to let you start the conversation off because I just hit the four main buckets I want to dip into tonight. When this game ended, taking everything in that you saw during that game, what was the first thing you thought of?
Yeah, no, the first thing I thought of was, what the hell is this offense doing?
Okay.
Like, I think a recency bias or someone that's being emotionally driven in what the hell happened would, of course, drive to the last drive sequence. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, if you even want to call it a drive, the last three play sequence for the Bills offense. But I think if you really even take that, and where my head truly was when the walk-off field goal happens by Fairburn, I truly was just, it's like, if put it simply, first thing I did was, what the hell did Josh Allen actually finish this game with? Because I was just curious. I wasn't paying attention to it. When games like this happen, Josh, I find myself less to be stat-driven, and I'm more just kind of immersed in the actual game itself emotionally. So from there, I wasn't truly understanding what Allen had finished with. I knew what I was watching was really bad. I knew that, okay, there was at least one big play that somehow developed itself on fourth and five to Keon Coleman for the one score, that it's like, maybe that even helped. But regardless, I was like, what was Josh Allen's stat line finished with? And when I saw 9 for 30 for 131 and one touchdown, it was like, one, sadly, that made sense. And two, how the hell did Josh Allen have a game where he had only 9 completions? To put it into perspective, Josh, the only game of recent memory in the NFL in general that I recall a starting quarterback that people have faith in and hope in, or at least did at the time, that then we kind of even laughed at for only having 9 completions in a game, Josh, was Anthony Richardson week 1, when he had 9 completions on whatever it was, but he had over, 200 something yards because he was hitting a lot of deep shots. That was a disaster. This felt like a disaster in a different sense, but we know how good Josh Allen can be. And the question really becomes, why the hell is this offense this inefficient? Why, what is going on that every play, every down felt like an absolute grind and a struggle? And it just, when thinking about the game, as I even enjoyed other 4 o'clock games going on, it was something that just kept coming back to me. Like, one, Curtis Samuel is truly useless, and how the hell did we pay him all this money? Two, who is going to be the answer on offense if Khalil Shakir truly is that big of a deal, which he is important to this team in general. But if he is that big of a deal where when he is out of the lineup, you can quite literally do nothing downfield at all, there's greater concerns to be had when it comes to how this roster is constructed overall, and how are we going to change that right now, understanding where we sit with the cap and everything that we have available or lack thereof. So yeah, it's all about the offense. It's all about the overall offensive performance to me, because it really feels like an extension from what we saw last week, even when we did have Khalil Shakir, although, not at 100% for a chunk of it, but overall it felt the same to me. And the only time we saw anything happen, Josh, was not necessarily today, but last week, even if you include it, was Josh Allen had to make superhuman plays and or a big splash play occurred. That's the only time you would ever see anything occur for this offense. Otherwise, you're pulling teeth out of a child. It's just miserable to watch, and you're only seeing pain and agony in front of you. It's awful. It's awful, awful. And I like that, you kind of laid out the points you want to get at, because serious questions are already being arisen on Joe Brady and truly what he's trying to achieve with this offense, because quite simply, it's just not good enough as a whole. I struggle to see where what we had seen in the first 3 weeks, and it felt like they could do no wrong for a large chunk of time. What are they actually trying to do now as they come up against adversity for the first time, it feels like, in the season? all of a sudden things aren't working out and it feels like there's zero answers to be had because of both personnel, but then also play calling. So it's a big, picture kind of reaction I had when the game ended of this offense gives me absolutely no hope that they can do anything moving forward until proven otherwise.
I like the Khalil Shakir point. He's a very good player. I think at this point, he's clearly the most trusted receiver of the group. Him being out should not neuter any NFL offense. I have no words for what's going on with Curtis Samuel. You paid him $24 million, $16 million of that guaranteed. He can't beat out Mac Hollins for playing time. And on a day where the Bills don't have Curtis, or they don't have Khalil Shakir, and they just need bodies out there, Curtis Samuel gives them one catch for 0 yards. Is that a player issue? Is that a coaching issue? Is that we were told they targeted this player in free agency and Joe Brady had the best year of Curtis Samuel's career when they were in Carolina together. This is not a situation where Curtis Samuel has to come in and learn a brand new playbook and it's taking him. This should be a hit the ground running signing. And it's anything but that. This is like if Davante Adams got traded to the Jets and he gets to play with Aaron Rodgers and Nate Hackett, like hit the ground running. And he's hit the ground and stood still. I don't know where the blame lays. The Curtis Samuel situation is an organizational failure at all levels. Why you identified him as a player you had to have, why your offensive coordinator pounded the table for him, and why this same offensive coordinator can't integrate him into any part of this offense outside of gadget plays. There were two explosive pass plays today from the offense. One, the Keon Coleman touchdown, which was a great play. It was fourth down. The Bills had to have it, but it was a 9-yard completion where Keon Coleman gets the rest of the 40 yards on his own. The next play that was explosive was I don't know the distance. Kincaid had 34 yards on the day. I want to say this one was like 20 or 25 yards. The next play was Dalton Kincaid over the middle in between two stationary receivers over the middle of the field. Outside of that, on 28 pass attempts, Josh Allen had 60 yards. 28 pass attempts for 60 yards. Josh Allen. This is a drought offense with Josh Allen driving it. What they have done with this wide receiver group is irresponsible, and there's no excuse for it. I understand the fact that they were up against the salary cap. I understand the fact that this was going to be a retooling year. I was in favor of the retooling year, but you still had plenty of assets to address the salary cap. You spent $24 million on Curtis Samuel, who barely had a jersey on today. You couldn't use that money elsewhere. And let's talk about Josh Allen. His best years of his career, when he went from being like a fun young quarterback to, wow, this guy's a superstar. What did he have? He had separators. Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, John Brown, separators. They get open. They add into the mix Emmanuel Sanders, a separator. Yeah, there was a Gabe Davis in there that was like wide receiver 4. Take the top off your defense when you forget about him. But it was separators. And this offseason, when they had to retool the thing from the ground up, every player they added to the mix is not a separator. That's not Keon Coleman's reputation. I think he can develop into that. Keon Coleman is a pup. He is not part of this problem right now. He's a young player, and to rely on him to be the best receiver in the group is malpractice by the Bills. Curtis Samuel was supposed to be a separator. He's barely a contributor. Mac Hollins is a career special teamer. Marquez Valdes-Scantling goes deep. That's about all he does. What are we left with? Tyrell Shavers? There's no separators on this team besides Khalil Shakir. I don't understand the vision when they built this wide receiver group. I don't understand why on draft day, when they had a long list of picks and everybody said how deep this wide receiver class is, why they didn't double dip. And now you're left with having this Ferrari of a quarterback in Josh Allen doing what Luca described, dropping back and just wondering what the hell he's looking at. And he's going to say all the right things and put the blame on his shoulders because Josh Allen is a fantastic teammate and he is not blameless for today. This was not a good Josh Allen day. The larger point is we all have reason to believe that Josh Allen is going to be just fine, But when you look at this wide receiver group, and if all that they add to it is Khalil Shakir coming back in a week or two, ask yourself if this group is capable of going out and winning four games in January against the best teams in football, because that's all that matters. If they're not, then you need to make a move today, because this is a Josh Allen year and you don't want to just set it on fire. I'm not telling you to mortgage your future to make a move. I'm telling you to go out there and make one of the couple available moves that we'll get into later in this show, where you flip a pick and you get a player that's contract expires at the end of the year and you still have all the cap space you set aside for next year. But this team right now, the ceiling on this team is not high enough for what a team that has Josh Allen at quarterback is supposed to be. And I don't think this team, as currently constructed, despite how well we've seen the defense play, whether it's the offensive coordinator that we're going to talk about for sure, or the weapons around the quarterback that cannot get open against single coverage, this team as currently constructed is very limited in how far they can go.
The separator point you bring up is absolutely spot on. And it's, what's the descriptor for it? It's borderline, not borderline. It is irresponsible, as you put it, in the sense of you need in this climate to have players on your roster that can provide different things. And if you literally, quite literally, only have one guy that you can truly trust to be that utility guy, to create separation, to be the go-ahead, that is a third-year player now out of Boise State that you drafted on day three, that you're starting to enjoy and just figure out and give the keys to the car. It's like you need something else. Your two highest paid targets are Curtis Samuel and Dawson Knox. They combined for 4 catches for 9 yards. Dawson Knox, by the way, 1 catch for 0 yards. Dawson Knox is irrelevant in the pass catching. We're going to go to a pass catching conversation here. Dalton Kincaid, you spent a first round pick on, and you just fail to utilize him in anything beyond kind of, I'm going to call it a simplistic route option and kind of design only go to the one big play you mentioned, that deep dig route that then was hit above the two squatted receivers that are kind of just planted there. Maybe it was by design. Maybe it just worked out that way because those two receivers can't run anyways. Who knows? That was the only time he actually made a big play. There was the other big play to be had. I know you mentioned it off air, Josh, where right up the seam, he was available. Al Shazier, if I'm saying that name right, if I butchered it, I apologize to him. Not that he knows, but he made a great play on the ball. Allen could have probably placed it a little bit better. It was still placed pretty well. It took a great play from the defender in order to break it up. But those are really the only two notable things. Everything outside of that, it's like Kincaid hits a quick flat kind of catch, tries to turn it upfield. I feel like we saw that even when it was, you know, Ken Dorsey's offense. It was the same old shit. And then from there, it's like you have all of these resources that you have sold to everyone, including your own. Like, the coaches are selling themselves and saying, we have an adequate amount of weapons, and what you're seeing there is just not good enough. I think by myself saying, and us, I'm going to repeat it probably tonight, and saying Josh Allen repetitively would drop back, look at what he had in front of him, and saw absolutely nothing. He just saw, you know, a bunch of defenders just shrouding everything that was an eligible receiver downfield. And he needed to then do something to maybe make a thing happen. And then the problem you run into, Josh, is I think that's when you brought this up before we started recording as well. And I think it's a great point. That's where you started to see a little bit of those bad tendencies from Allen, even in the past, start to creep their way back. The one that really sticks out to me is it felt like at a point, Josh, where Allen just felt he needed to roll out to see if he could create an angle of a pass to open up, whatever it might be. And then he would just force a crossbody ball. There was one where he just hits a defender in the chest. And I think he was targeting Ty Johnson with three defenders around him. It was something abysmal where you're like, Josh, what are you doing? Like, hey, buddy, just take the loss. But on a day where he's not seeing it kind of develop downfield in a conventional sense, he is clearly feeling that that's the only way he's going to be able to deliver a pass to any receiver downfield. And that's not good. And that's a problem that goes on roster build and everything you've put kind of at his arsenal. It's just not good enough. And I share a mind with you. It's that game right there is quite simply the game that the offense was so bad and the weapons were so useless that you effectively need to do something to change it up. And it's not by simply, you know, it's something that needs to come from out of house. There is nothing in house that you should have seen from there that you can shuffle the deck and see how it works. You need to introduce something else. And separator is a great one. Just something that provides this offense a different level of dynamic play downfield, because it does not exist in house. Even if you have Shakir back, Josh, I do not believe you will get anything else, because my point of bringing up even the Ravens game was, even in that sense, it felt like a struggle. Now that comes down to, I believe, offensive play design, what they're trying to achieve and all of that such. And that's a whole nother conversation, but Shakir can only do so much. He isn't an elite receiver in this game. He has a lot of potential and a lot of ability, but you need something else that truly is that dominant threat, that true, you know, the guy you have to circle on the board when you're prepping for the Bills should be someone outside of Josh Allen. I shouldn't say someone outside, needs to be someone with Josh Allen. And that currently doesn't exist. So right now, quite simply, all you need to do is, hey, we just run our defense, make sure everyone has eyes on Josh Allen, and we'll probably be able to survive this. Okay. And that's what it felt like today was. That's what it felt like the Ravens even kind of was. It wasn't anything fancy. It wasn't anything over the top. It's just make sure everyone has eyes and understanding of where Allen is, and then just do your job defensively and we'll be okay. They're not going to be able to create anything on us. It will not happen. And it stems from a lot of things, but weapons and the lack of skill and dynamic ability in that room is clearly a massive part of it.
When you look at the last two games, even when the Bills came back today, they were down 17-3 at halftime, 20-3 after the Texans' first drive. The Bills, to their credit, came back and made it 20-20. There was nothing about that comeback that felt like the Bills had turned the corner or figured it out offensively. If anything, it felt like the Bills were taking advantage of, and I say that kind of loosely, taking advantage of some horrendous Houston Texans mistakes. A great interception by Terrell Bernard, a very poor read by C.J. Stroud. The Bills do nothing with it. A strip sack by Smoot to set the Bills up on the 15-yard line with, I think, like 6 minutes to go when the Bills are down by three, and they get a field goal. Now, my one issue with that sequence real quick, Luca, maybe we can talk about that real quick. So Josh Allen on the previous drive had gotten hit and went into the blue tent. The Bills get the quick turnover and Trubisky comes out and takes the first snap, hands it to Cook, no gain. And then Josh Allen runs back on the field. But Josh Allen had gotten out of the blue tent and put his helmet on prior to Trubisky snapping the ball. I would not have minded. And I don't want to be after the fact guy. I want to tell you how I felt in the moment. I would not have minded in that scenario, the Bills burning a timeout there to get Allen on the field. My reasoning is the Bills predictably, and we'll get into this, predictably ran the ball with James Cook on like every single first down, except for the very end of the game when a lot of people wanted them to. I think our numbers we came up with were 12 out of 14 first downs. They ran the ball with James Cook. With Mitch Trubisky in the game and everybody in the stadium knowing he's only in the game for one play, everybody in the stadium knows that Trubisky is not going out there to throw the ball if Josh Allen's trotting out there the next down. So the whole world knew it was going to be a James Cook run. That play felt dead to me from the start. To me, it would have been worth it to put the Texans in a bind on that drive, treating that drive as that was your chance to win the game, giving Josh Allen another look at it on first down. It could have very easily been a first down handoff to Cook that goes for no yards with Josh Allen, but I would have rather had the franchise quarterback on the field. What do you think about that scenario?
It's a great thing you're bringing up. And if anyone's watching, you just see me nodding away and, or sorry, I guess it's, is it
shaking your head?
Shaking. Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Shaking. It's late here. It's not even that late. I say it's late and it's only 10:41. Anyways, that exact kind of dialogue happened in my living room, Josh.
Okay.
Exact. It really did, verbatim. And I immediately, instinctually said, no. No, 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 no. Timeouts are way too valuable. And I'll tell you exactly why I immediately shot that idea down in the living room, at least from my own personal perspective. I am okay with Mitch Trubisky handing that ball off and letting it be what it is. You have now a two-down series. Does that suck? Yes. But here's the thing. Those timeouts are even more valuable when I couldn't even trust a Josh Allen offense to punch that in. For the first time, it felt like in almost forever, we had Josh Allen in prime form, and I genuinely didn't believe that we were going to score. And I didn't even think that we were going to win the game at that point. It's incredible to look back and think about how I was uncomfortable with the situation. As you pointed out, you have the ball on their 15 to start. You're down three with, I don't even know how much time was left, but I know it was deep into the fourth quarter. And you just genuinely cannot trust that that team is going to make an impact there where you feel like you can win the game. Because I am 100% telling you the truth where Josh Allen even coming onto the field at second down, second and 10, whatever it ended up being after no gain run, whatever it was, second and long, I didn't trust that anything was going to come of it. So if we're now in a situation where you're eventually going to have to kick a field goal, it's a tie game, and then go from there, you want to have your three timeouts in your bag. What I think is ironic about all of this, though, Josh, is, correct me if I'm wrong, if you have the drive log up, they then use one of their timeouts in that same series of downs. Do they not? I'm almost positive, because I recall then everyone thinking, you know, essentially it's just, why the hell didn't you just call a timeout at that point in time? Maybe I'm misremembering that. It could have been maybe where they could have challenged something, and then it was like, why are you burning the timeout then afterwards? Was that in that same series of downs? I want to say it was.
Remind me of the play. There was a pass to Coleman, like to the 2-yard line, where he goes out of bounds. I think this may have been
1 foot down. The elbow may have been in, yeah. But I think it was out, to be
one honest. Foot down, but you're just watching that elbow and it just comes like an inch short. I think that they watched the replay too many times that they had to burn a timeout. And you're thinking to yourself, you might as well challenge it if you're going to just call a timeout anyway.
Yeah. If you're getting under 5 seconds on the play clock, just challenge it.
Yeah.
And the off chance that it reverses, like, you can't be sitting there holding your breath that much and then pocket it, which there's not going to be, this might be the only time I say anything that's a positive to Sean McDermott. That would have been a quick challenge out of McDermott in the old. I will say that. This one, he went through the process of what they've hired in-house. They evaluated it. Now, they evaluated it clearly for too long or whatever was going on. But he didn't make an emotional decision. He was trying to make the most educated decision he could. Props, question mark. Really, you know, asterisk.
Yeah, like props? Yeah.
But overall, that whole sequence, if you're just talking and isolating it down to from Allen coming out of the blue injury tent to the moment where he's on the field, no, I do not think it's a smart idea to burn a timeout there just to get your quarterback out there for the first down, because ultimately with the way things are going, with how things are, you can make the argument that it's like you need to maximize then those opportunities. But in that same regard, you genuinely could not trust your offense, even with Josh Allen, to move the ball effectively. So if you're just going to ultimately run it first down anyways, like it seemed like they were doing regardless, just do it with Trubisky, get it over with, because it's not going to work anyways. And then you have that timeout in your bag for hopefully something more useful down the line, which inevitably didn't matter anyways. But I shouldn't even say that, because actually their timeouts did end up mattering, because the Texans, even with two timeouts left, still had to punt it back, thankfully, and overall it was. But boy, would it have been nice to have that third timeout sitting there in your back pocket for that sequence. A lot more time. You probably would have been more comfortable with running it maybe once or twice while pinned on your own end zone, whatever it might be. It is what it is now at this point. But to your point and to what we're discussing here, I disagree with your sentiments. I just think they did do the appropriate thing where it's just burn the play effectively and then get Allen out there while still trying to pocket your timeout as much as you could.
Okay. I mean, I'm the fact that it was debate in your living room, I think you can go either way with it. It was just kind of a in the moment thing I was thinking. So the point I was going for before I got sidetracked on that is their offense, even the last couple of games when things have worked, it's been the splash plays. It's been Josh Allen almost out of bounds throwing a rope to Khalil Shakir, who's wide open because the Ravens thought the play was dead. And then it's a 9-yard pass on fourth down where Keon Coleman makes the cornerback miss a tackle and he's off to the races. But there's been just no 10-yard drive or 10-play drive where the Bills slice and dice you and you look like you're off balance the entire drive and they punch it in. The beauty of the Josh Allen offense the last 3 or 4 years has been the Bills are incredibly efficient. They can run the ball. They can throw it to a number of weapons all over the field. And oh, by the way, just when you think you have everything covered, that guy that has the ball in his hands puts on his cape and makes a play that you've probably never seen before, whether it's running for a first down and hurdling a linebacker or buying enough time to throw a rope down the field to Gabe Davis, Dawson Knox, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley. We've all seen the plays. None of the efficiency is left. The last 2 weeks, there is no efficiency. In fact, the only big plays this team gets anymore are the Josh Allen cape plays. There is no sustained drives. All defenses are doing at this point is playing one high, taking away the middle of the field and daring these receivers to try to beat them. And they're not getting it done. Luca, you and I are going to have a larger conversation about Joe Brady, but I do want to talk about that end of game sequence now. So this to me felt like an ultimate battle of two teams not knowing how to win a game. The way the Texans handled it at the end, where the Texans, when they had the ball, before they punted down to the Bills' 2-yard line, the Bills were out of timeouts. I want you all to remember this. The Texans end up winning this game on a 60-yard field goal from Kyahmi Fairburn, who is one of the most accurate kickers in the sport. And in that building, he hits long field goals like it's nothing. So if you've paid attention to his career, you didn't feel good at that last field goal. No. But the Texans were right on the brink of his field goal range. And all they had to do, if they were okay with settling for a 60-yard field goal, was run the ball up the middle a couple times, and they would have given him basically a shot to kick a field goal as time expired, as what happened. But the Texans threw two passes, two incomplete passes, and the Bills end up having 40 seconds. And then because the last incomplete pass was ruled intentional grounding, it actually knocked them out of field goal range. Funny story. I started thinking about that. And granted, he makes the last kick, so maybe my last point is moot here. But when that intentional grounding knocks them out of field goal range, there's a part of me that thought that was bad for the Bills. Like, oh, come on, Texans. I dare you to try this field goal. Because if they miss that field goal, the Bills are now sitting on the 50-yard line with 15 yards until Tyler Bass can try a kick. Or the downside is he makes a field goal, but instead of punting it down to the Bills and potentially getting a scenario like they did where, you know, they're walled in at the 2-yard line, we're talking about a kickoff where chances are the Bills are going to get the ball at the 25-yard line after a touchback, 40-yard, you know, they have to go, what is that at that point? 40 yards to get into field goal range in 40 seconds. That's doable. I mean, you'd feel pretty good about the Bills' chance. In previous years, you'd feel pretty good about the Bills' chances in that scenario. So there was a tiny part of me that thought, like, I wonder if that's bad for the Bills. And then they punted it away and the Bills get the ball. It's first down, Luca. I want you to be as honest with me as you were comfortable being. What are you hoping for? Because there are three doors the Bills can choose to go through at this point in time. One, be conservative as possible and just punt the ball away. Make sure no matter what, the Texans have zero timeouts when you're done with the football. Door number two, we have to get a first down. If we get some Texans timeouts to come along with us, great. But we have to get a first down. That is the only way we avoid losing in regulation. I don't care about trying to win this game here. We need 10 yards to get this game to overtime. We're in a bad spot. We're on the 2-yard line. Somehow we got to get 10 yards. Door number three, hey, we got the ball. We got 40 seconds. I don't care what field position we're in. We got Josh effing Allen. We're going to go down and win it right now. Which door would you have gone through?
my honest opinion was door one. When that all went out the window as soon as we saw a pass play. But when you're pinned inside the two, it's like, look, I love the go for the win. It's well documented. That's generally my thought process. But a couple things here. One, this offense cannot move the ball. And I, as I just said in a previous drive, I did not trust this offense in scoring position to be able to maximize that opportunity. Now, what makes you think, Josh, that I think anything different as they're now pinned on their own two, that they're going to be able to do something else? 40 seconds left, no timeouts. Two, you are just introducing anything else when it comes to the unexpected if you don't just simply run it. Now, something could still go awry, a fumble, whatever, but you're doing... It's... How do I approach this? It's the first time ever where I truly believe Sean McDermott felt like it was a time to show that he's not the conservative guy you think he is. And it was quite literally the time to be the play not to lose, be conservative moment.
You guys want to see me get wild? Let's get nuts.
Because McDermott has to be listening, if he's doing his job, has to be listening to the play calls coming in. And he's the head coach. You have ultimate end all be all. We're not doing this. Or you even give the suggestion ahead of time before the call even comes in. For him to sit there and listen to Joe Brady on first down, call a pass play. On second down, call a pass play. And then on third down, hey, spoiler alert, we're going to call a shot play. That is, and then it just let it happen. Boy, is that a time not to be Sean McDermott. Because that is when that moment happens, Josh. I would be happy as hell. I mean, first down, Josh, just give me a Josh Allen tush push. Make it, second and nine from the three. Now, I'm not saying that's the smartest thing to do. I'm just saying be conservative. Try to create space on your first and second down play. If you break a run, that's a bonus. Are you probably going to break a run based on what we saw? No. But what you're going to do is one, make them use all their timeouts, of course, because that would be the thing they're going to do. And two, create the space needed where hopefully Sam Martin can do something better than kind of a three-quarter swing at a punt to make sure he just gets it out of the end zone cleanly and everything's okay. But obviously, as we saw, what that does is introduces the ability to return it a little bit. And now you've really put yourself in a bad spot because you just basically handed them back field goal position.
Sam Martin's warming up for that punt, am I the only one who noticed that he put his heels on the paint that says like end racism that all the end zones are outlined with, but that's out of bounds. Like that's not the end zone. It's like different colored paint, but it's like, it's out of bounds, but it's where they put like end racism or whatever the message is. It might be like the cancer, but either way, and he's put his heels like on the back of that. And I am like, oh my God, he's going to catch this ball out of bounds because he doesn't know where he's at. And then my heart skipped a beat and then he like jumped forward real quick. Did anybody else catch that? Did you catch that?
I didn't catch that, but I was losing
my mind.
You would like to think he wouldn't because those awful ass sideline or end zones. Oh my God, those were terrible. But it was a big black or dark blue. I don't know what color it was. I'm colorblind. Yeah. Mine, I think it was black. Just it's a big black box. You would like to think you know, then it's like, hey, that's the end zone, little green space, and then the white of the out of bounds that you know it to always be.
There's a color change there, buddy. Scoot up.
No, I didn't notice that. But I will say, Sam Martin, it's not like he was extraordinary. He punted a lot and he didn't really have too many. I think he had one that was under 40 yards, but ultimately it wasn't like he had a bad day. No. So I will say I was comfortable with it. But you're putting your punter in the worst position possible by doing what you did. You're giving him 8 yards of space, basically. I mean, it's actually 12 from ball to that, but with the contours of your punt blocking formation and everything like that, we'll call it 8 yards of space because they're going to get driven back a little bit, of course. And that's again why you have to do a little bit of a three-quarter just pooch punt, get it out of there, get it out clean and quick. But you're introducing return. You're introducing the ability to play that. And unless that returner really screws that up, he's probably going to have a good opportunity at putting it back into field goal range, which they basically did. I think Sam Martin did the best he could. But ultimately, going back to your question, it's like it is first and 10 at your own two after they pinned you deep. I know words were said in my living room that's like, all right, just run it out and try to get to overtime. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what your mindset should have been. Plain and simple. As I said, if there was a time for Sean McDermott to be Sean McDermott and be conservative and be that defensive-minded coach and kind of just try not to lose it here, that was it. I mean, that was the moment. If I was anyone that had control ownership of his job, I'd be calling him in tomorrow morning and going, what was your thought process there? Because that's something that's like you just kind of going full on Maverick at your job mm-hmm. and everyone just scratching their head and going, that's very out of character of you. What was your thought process on that? Mm-hmm. And just being very curious to know why you did what you did, because to say I'm shocked that a Sean McDermott defense did that or defense, a Sean McDermott team did that is an understatement. It was when that first down pass happened, Josh, I was stunned. When the second down pass happened, I was like, holy shit, something else is going on right now. And I'm really not comfortable with it because honestly, this entire game plus what we saw with the Ravens doesn't exactly instill confidence in me that we're going to be able to do anything with it. Although the idea of Josh Allen's always in the back of your head. But to answer your question again and simply put an end to this point, yeah, no, not a fan of what the hell took place.
So Luca's door number one, I'm firmly door number two. And that's why after the game was over, I put out some tweets from our account saying, I'm not mad at the Bills for throwing three times in a row. When the Bills get the ball back on the 2 yard line, I think it's a failure no matter what happens if you don't get a first down. If you run it three times with James Cook and you punt, I think you're still going to lose the game. The one thing the Texans lose is that opportunity to run a play anywhere they want to in the field because they have timeouts in their pocket. So in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not even, once the punt goes down to the 2 yard line, if it had been a touchback, I'd be thinking, try to get in field goal range. Once the punt goes down to the 2 yard line, I even tweeted out from our account, just get this game to overtime anyway. I'm thinking 10 yards, 10 yards is the goal. Three Josh Allen pass plays, in my mind, I feel like my odds of getting 10 yards are just fine. Josh Allen, maybe on a quarterback draw would have been a good play. Josh Allen on a quarterback sweep would have been a good play. Okay, so I'm going to say all of that, and I want to get one point out of the way too. You've heard us talk about how the Bills had 40 seconds, and I know, unfortunately, in our history, we know that you can go down the field in 13 seconds. And if you want a more positive outlook, we saw the Bills do it in 16 seconds in Detroit on Thanksgiving. The major difference in those scenarios is what Luca called out before. They had no timeouts in their pocket. So to have any drive of any success, the Bills were going to have to work the sidelines. If the Bills convert a 20-yard pass, okay, to Mac Hollins, stick with me, folks, a 20-yard pass to Mac Hollins over the middle of the field on first down, the drive is still dead because it's going to take them 15 to 20 seconds to get up and spike the ball. And now you're what, at the 25-yard line with no timeouts? The odds of going up the sideline three or four times are so against you. And also to Luca's point, if Keon Coleman doesn't interfere with the DB on the first play, that could have been picked.
Oh yeah.
So that was scary. So where I defended the Bills is the strategy of throwing, because in my mind, I thought they had to be trying to get the first down. And Josh Allen went into hyper-competitive mode and was taking the deep throws. Okay, so then I get into post-game. I listen to what McDermott had to say. And then I go back and rewatch the plays. And now I'm dumbfounded because McDermott said, yeah, we wanted to be aggressive there, and made it sound like they wanted to get into field goal range. And I'm thinking, okay, that makes no sense to me given the circumstances. And then I go back and watch the plays, and it's the second down play to Mac Hollins, Luca, that really threw me off, because watching it live, I remember a couple guys breaking out over the middle and Josh Allen throws it deep to Mac Hollins. Now, that play was kind of there to be made, but it was not a high percentage throw. But Kincaid is wide open like 7 yards on an in route. I'm thinking that Josh Allen missed the layup on this throw and he threw it deep. It's part of the Josh Allen experience we all have to be okay with. I go back and watch the replay. Josh Allen hits his third step on his drop. He pump fakes And that exact moment he pump fakes is when Mac Hollins does his quick little double move deep. That's a shot call. That entire play call was a shot call. There was never any intention of throwing it to Dalton Kincaid. So the Bills chose door number three. That's inexcusable.
Yeah.
Door number two makes sense to me because you have to get a first down by hook or by crook, because Fairburn is money basically past the 50 in that building. And you're dead when you punt it to them, no matter how many timeouts they have. If your argument is they should have just kneeled it or run into a wall three times and punted, I think you're setting yourself up for the same scenario. If your argument is they should have gone down for a field goal, I would question your mental health. Because what in the world odds? I don't care if you have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, all of them in their prime. That's a bad play at that moment to try to go for it from that scenario. I did not understand it. And it felt like after the Texans did everything in their power to hand the game back to the Bills were like, oh, hold our beer. Here's one last flub by us, and we're going to let you guys have a wonderful Sunday afternoon.
I don't even know how to be. It's the one thing I can kind of go, it was there. And even to your credit and your point, if you want to try to at least get the first down to see it out, right, to kind of get yourself the space, and on top of it all, you get a new series of downs where eventually and hopefully you should be able to get it to overtime and see it to overtime. On third down, Josh, it did feel like that over the middle play was there. It's just, unfortunately, someone or something hit Allen as he was releasing it. Of course, it then ends up short. But I don't even remember who the intended receiver was, but that was there.
Oh, it was Curtis Samuel.
Oh, okay.
In a fitting way for the game to end.
That's perfect. But regardless, I mean, that's how forgettable he was. But overall, that was the one where it was like, well, maybe then they were like, okay, let's just at least try to get the first down here after taking a couple opportunities to maybe move it down the field. But it is, you say it perfectly. It's inexcusable to even think in any world, even in Josh Allen operating at all cylinders, that you are going to start at your own two with no timeouts and move that ball down the field to the point where you can even give Bass an attempt where you need to have that ball realistically at, let's say, the 37 to 40. So then that gives you like a 55 to 58 yard try, because I mean, it's hard to trust Bass, which in all credit, he hit every kick he had to today, but we all understand going into this game, and it will probably continue after this game, the lack of trust in Bass to be able to make kicks when it matters. He has proven that not when it matters, but he's proven that he's kind of hit knucklers and horrible kicks this season, let alone even going back to last season, and the trust is not quite there. Something's clearly off. So you're trusting that this offense, not running at all cylinders, is going to drive the field, or at least drive down to, let's say, the 37. So that effectively puts you at 58, 59 yards in 40 seconds with no timeouts. How are you doing that? And I would have loved if someone following up to McDermott saying that we were, you know, being aggressive there and trying to go for it, essentially, I would have loved someone just to bring up the numbers and be like, McDermott, break those numbers down for me right now. Because let's be honest, Josh, in the time a reporter or a media individual asks McDermott, this is the situation you had in front of you, this is what you needed to achieve, please tell me how you were going to achieve that, that's probably the amount of time you actually need to make that decision. Am I wrong in that sentiment?
No, you're right.
That is the amount of time. So I need to know that you actually processed that information, understood the situation, and made that call based on understanding that situation, because I don't believe that was the case. And again, I am going to probably die on the sword of McDermott truly used that opportunity to show I'm not so conservative after all. Boy, is that the wrong time to stand on your soapbox and make that statement, because that is literally the time that if you would have gone into your shell, let's say is Josh's example, and done door number one and said, this is what we're going to do. Not one person in this world would have thought anything otherwise than, well, he just tried to run out as much as he could, make them spend their timeouts, get a little space for the punter, the conventional things. There are certain times, Josh, where I really hate analytics or aggressiveness or, you know, the next gen of football thought process, that is an old school time. That is a time to just go lick your wounds, accept the game situation. Let's just see what we can do by at least managing the game at this point. That's exactly what he needed to do. And in that moment, that's exactly what he failed to recognize and actually accomplish. And it ultimately cost the Bills this game, among all of the other things. It was the perfect exclamation point of a failure on the sentence that was this game. It was a brutal way for McDermott to finish this game for the Bills, because it just encapsulated everything wrong with it. And where you fail to recognize in big moments when it truly needs to be processed quick, what ultimately is the best thing to do for your team to put them in a position to win. He clearly did not do that.
So we understand that the weapons aren't good. We understand that McDermott has had better days. How much can we blame Joe Brady? Because in putting aside the fact that we agree the Bills need more weapons, I wonder where the easy button throws have gone that we saw the first 3 weeks of the season. You wonder where some of this pre-snap motion the Bills have utilized to put defenses in a bind has gone. It cannot be as simple as Khalil Shakir was gone and the offense was neutered. I mean, that would be unacceptable. How much right now, Luca, are you willing? I don't want to say willing. How much are you doubting Joe Brady? Where is your patience level with him? I don't know if patience, I mean, it's 5 games into his full-time career here. What's your concern level with Joe Brady right now?
Moderate. I am moderately concerned. There is enough, I think, already, even in this short time, this 5-week time, as you even perfectly called it, in his full-time play calling career, that effectively the pre-snap motion conversation is fascinating and fun to me. And fun is, I mean, it's a loose term for it, but what we saw happening weeks 1 through 3, key moments, and when you got to have it plays are coming out, Josh. We would see, you know, I'll call it the Tyreek-like motions happening in the backfield, drawing attention, Curtis Samuels being used as that guy. Use whoever you want. And if Curtis Samuels is a weapon for you to use in that sense, fine. I don't care at this point. But you did that. It created the mismatch. It created some sort of confusion, whatever it is. On the defensive side, it opened up the opportunity to obtain the yards you had to have in that moment, and it actually created big plays off of play calling. This is 2 weeks in a row now that we have seen none of that. Pre-snap motion-wise, I mentioned this to you off-air, something that I am absolutely done with is seeing this, what I'm going to call half-assed motion halfback outside tackle. See what you're seeing, make adjustment off of it, and slide him back in. Because what we had seen now is that defenses are just ignoring and don't give a shit about it. And if they don't give a shit about it, you better not be making any sort of adjustments off of that, because then you can't trust what you're seeing in the first place anyways. And I would really hope to think that they have now experienced that 2 weeks in a row and they're going to learn from that, because it's not working. And that simple little overthinking bullshit is not going to cut it. And if that's the only pre-snap motion you're going to present, because you don't want to use up all of Curtis Samuel's energy anymore doing your little loop motions, or, you know, no one else really can do that kind of stuff, or you don't have any other pre-snap motion options anyways in your arsenal, well, that's where the big concerns start coming in. And that's where I'm really concerned. It's like, how deep is your playbook? How deep is your understanding on what to do to address the things that are eventually being put on tape? It's something that I think I'm scarred from watching a lot of Cliff Kingsbury. It's also what makes me feel like Washington will eventually regress, not to get off of Bills. But it's like, there's play callers in the world, Josh, that somehow think that they've designed this whole world of offense that is so great, and they're going to showcase it for the world right out the gate, and it's going to look great. And then all of a sudden, week 9-10 comes around, and defenses have enough material to have answers, and you have nothing to fight back with. It's something we criticize Dorsey with. It's something that's a criticism out there for a lot of offensive coordinators. I'm starting to be concerned moderately, as I mentioned, with Brady that he truly doesn't have an understanding of how to even utilize, or in chess terms, play multiple moves ahead. He has this idea that he wants to do things, how he wants to do them. There's play calls, and he's going to have Allen's, you know, hey, Brady's calling in the good plays, I need to execute talk. But simply sitting from the outside looking in, it's already sitting here at week five, like Brady has no counter punches. He's overthinking things, thinking that he's going to get the answers he needs pre-snap by just motioning a halfback outside tackle in the backfield. And that's going to provide Allen all the information, which you do see Allen make adjustments to, you know, the blocking, his pass pro. He's doing other things as well. He's adjusting off of that look. It's like, you need to shelf that shit because it's not working anymore. No one respects it. And now what do you have to kind of counteract all of this? Because if you have nothing, you are useless. You are quite literally useless. Because now we have to now go through the remainder of the season, 13 more weeks of the NFL season, 12 more games, and you are going to have absolutely nothing beyond what we've already seen. And NFL teams are really smart, and tape is out there. Or, I mean, it's not tape anymore, but for the kids out there, tape was a thing that people had to utilize at one point. It's out there. You are going to be documented. And in the world of AI as well, I'm sure trends and personnel groupings and matchups and line assignments and all of those things are going to be mapped very quickly, Josh, that come week 8, week 9, week 10. All of those criticisms I love to have for a Cliff Kingsbury offense is probably going to start molding itself into a Joe Brady offense, where it's like, this guy has zero answers for anything that he sees when he has, you know, issues, when defenses have answers for him. And there's nothing he can do about it because he's too stupid to play two moves ahead. And that is where it would go from moderate to extreme. And you are wasting Josh Allen by having it even approach that level. And you need to do something about it as an organization.
Well, I'm impatient with him because he's been handed the keys to a Ferrari. And when you have a Ferrari, you expect it to drive like a Ferrari. And through the last two games, it hasn't. And, you know, the Cardinals game was good. The Dolphins game, they didn't have to do much. They leaned on James Cook. And after that, the Jaguars game was fantastic. And then the last two games have been atrocious. And Luca mentioned it. The book is out on the Bills right now. You can single high them. You can just play middle of the field defense. You can man them up and dare them to beat you. Luca, I just, while you were talking, this is how desperate I am. I went to NFL practice squads and looked at wide receivers on NFL. This is where we're at, folks.
That's depressing.
It's going to be week 6 of the NFL season, and I'm scouring practice squads. And there are some intriguing names out there. I put them in chat if you happen to wonder what I was putting in chat. But Terrace Marshall is a guy that, you know, was a big, fast receiver. He might be a little redundant with what the Bills have now, but, you know, Carolina ties. Kyle Phillips is an interesting name. He's a guy that, I think he's like a smaller slot receiver. I don't know what his role would be when Shakir comes back, unless you want to move Shakir to the boundary. Paris Campbell, another slot receiver. Get ready, Luca. Kadarius Toney is on the practice squad. Deion Kane's a guy that spent some time with the Bills this summer, but just could not get, you know, he flashed a little bit in preseason, but just wasn't here long enough to make the squad. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones is a guy that, you know, he's been kind of an intriguing name the last few years, but now he's a practice squad receiver. Is there anybody there that tickles your fancy? And keep in mind, this is not a long-term solution. This is, let's get rid of Marquez Valdez-Scantling and let's bring in anybody else kind of move.
tickles my fancy. no, I like, are they there?
Rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, basically that's what it would feel like, that kind of move, dude. What's the difference of bringing one of these guys in compared to an Andy Isabella or whatever else is, you know, just like, you're just reshuffling items that are is a sinking ship as it is, and they're not going to move the needle enough for anything to feel like it's going to change. The only way you're going to do that is you're going to have to splash into that trade market if you truly want to try to save the Titanic. If you truly want to save the boat from sinking, like it feels like it's starting to do right now. And All right. You're not going to achieve that from individuals that you just listed. I just, Like, it's funny that my eye first goes to like Paris Campbell, but boy, I'm not sitting here thinking Paris Campbell is going to be such an impact player. Going back to the weapons conversation, like you mentioned separators. I mentioned, you know, you need someone that kind of truly is notable next to Josh Allen. And I don't, it's not that I don't respect Khalil Shakir. I love Khalil Shakir. It's just a defensive coordinator out there doesn't have to necessarily circle him as the player. It's his role on the offense that becomes the problem. And you need to find that guy that, because of who he is, stands next to Josh Allen as a problem that you need the game plan for. That does not exist right now in this offense. And that's the only thing that's going to save a sinking ship.
I agree with you. I think it is time to talk about some of those big game moves the Bills can do. And Luca and I are going to get into a couple of big time trade ideas that the Bills could do this week, right after we put a bow on this Texans Bills game with our segment that we like to call Game Balls and Game Checks. So the way this works is we hand out our game balls to a Bills player that we thought deserves a game ball for this game. We do not overlap. So if Luca picks, I don't know, Josh Allen, I won't pick Josh Allen. Neither one of us are going to do that. And then same thing for game checks. It's the direct opposite, least valuable player that should hand in his game check. Luca, I'll give you the honors of picking the first game ball recipient for this Bills 23-20 loss to the Houston Texans.
Not many nominees for this one, Josh. But I'm going to point out someone. It's going to be, I believe, his second week in a row. If I recall how our episode went last week. I believe it's the individual you called out, but it's going to be mine now. I mean, Dorian Williams, I think, had another week that was strong. I mean, he statistically finished with 11 tackles, one assist. That pops off the page immediately, but it had the way he was playing in a game like today, it had me make the out loud comment of Dorian Williams clearly is doing really well, seeing everything in front of him. He's just still, he's continuing to struggle with things behind him, but that's, I feel like at this point in time with Dorian Williams, that's, I will call, acceptable plus. I think that's what you should be asking of Dorian Williams. Please just clean up what you're seeing in front of you. Please be confident that you're going to be able to stop the thing in front of you. And he's doing that very well. And I think he did that well again today. He might have had one missed tackle. I feel like I recall one, but to be quite frank, a lot of people had a bad day today. So
it was that scramble by Stroud where Rousseau missed him in the backfield and then Williams missed him too. And it was like, if our two best tacklers didn't get him down, we just got tip or cap.
Right. There was that. And it still was something that I feel like it didn't hold him back. And again, no one's perfect out here. And I think Dorian Williams is doing a very good job. It's giving me hope that at least something's happening in development where you have now what happened with Terrell Bernard. Dorian Williams isn't, you know, skyrocketing as high as Terrell Bernard, but there's something happening there where things are being left in good hands when it comes to your linebacking for years to come, for time now, where we're getting more and more comfortable with these individuals that are going to be impact players as a Matt Milano is still sitting there on the sidelines and will eventually be moved on from. And Dorian Williams is a guy that hopefully will continue to progress off of this. And maybe that game behind him will eventually come to him. But overall, he's seeing things in front of him really well. And I think today's performance encapsulated that overall. So my game ball goes to him.
I like that call a lot. I think Dorian Williams has really shined this year. Let's keep in mind, this is a player that, as we all look back on that playoff game where AJ Klein has become a meme, where he couldn't cover Travis Kelce, Dorian Williams was healthy and they trusted AJ Klein off the couch over him. And it really reminds me of the Terrell Bernard ascension from last year, where a player you have almost no hope for gets put into a big role. And he's not thriving on the Bernard 2022 level or 2023 level, but he's playing very well. I think at this point, I feel great about him as the Bills' third linebacker. And to your point, I would be totally comfortable if the Bills start to put more on his plate and try to let him sprinkle in on some of those passing situations and see where he's at, because I am excited about his future. I love the attitude he plays with. He reminds me a lot of Tyrell Dotson in that regard. And I think he's been a breath of fresh air for this defense. I was very impressed with Dwayne Carter's day today. I thought there were several splash plays by him. I thought he held up well for a guy that was thrown into the fire and played pretty well. I mean, Christian Benford is a guy that it feels like every week you could hand it to. He just never gets beat in the passing game. So he's another guy. Dwayne Smoot got the sack and the fumble. That was a good play. And if I was going to go to somebody on offense, I'd give it to Deion Dawkins. Came up with a hamstring injury late in the week. You figure a guy that's, you know, well over 300 pounds playing on a sore hamstring. Josh Allen got sacked one time and it wasn't Deion Dawkins' fault. This is not an easy edge rusher group with the Texans. So I'd give it to Deion Dawkins. But my game ball is going to go to Terrell Bernard. Came back, the captain of the defense, made the huge fourth and one stop where he jumps over the pile and makes a tackle, makes a game-changing interception. Just everything about the defense felt significantly more organized with the team captain out there today. And boy, oh boy, was it nice to see Terrell Bernard out there leading his group. This should be a little easier, Luca. A little more to choose from. Who gets your game check? Should I make it challenging and say we can't go with a coach? Or no, we probably shouldn't do that. No, I won't do that. Least valuable. It can be anybody.
Least valuable of all the least valuable people today. Because honestly, you would have loved to have seen a lot of individuals change and see what the heck happens. Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, I would be curious to hear what you're going to say, but like Curtis Samuel, Martis, MVS, like there's so many individuals. I mean, Cole Bishop, I mentioned off air, he's a pup, as you like to say. It was his first career start. He had a struggle of a game, but overall, it's his first start in the NFL. I'm not going to fault him for it, but like your Curtis Samuel, MVS is on the other hand. Those are guys that should be able to figure shit out. Like they're vets. They've been around and they were useless. But no, I mean, this comes down to coaching. And we talked about the offensive play being questionable, and that's what I came away from the game. I mentioned, I believe last week, Joe Brady was my guy. I'm not doing him because it was last week, but overall, that final sequence, and truly for this segment here, Sean McDermott, dude. I'm going to swear here. Fucking know who you are. And be who you are. If there's a fucking time to be who you are, it's when the game is on the line. And the game is on the line. Don't be who you're not. And that's exactly what you did, trying to be an aggressive coach and, you know, let it fly with Allen and see what happens. You watched 59 minutes of play where your offense couldn't do shit, basically. The two splash plays that Josh brings up, one was a touchdown thanks to a broken tackle and a nice-ish play from Keon Coleman, and the other was just thankfully a deep dig in route was there after a couple of receivers were squatting down and Kincaid was able to run upfield with it. Other than that, you couldn't do shit. So you passed, what was it, Josh? I believe 60 yards in total outside of those two plays. So,
59, yep.
Yeah, right. So you now need to drive, I did that math here, that same amount of yards in 40 seconds with no timeouts. You just did that over the stretch of 59 minutes, basically. McDermott, be who you are, game management. There was a time to do that, and that was late in the game. You're getting my game check because of that, because that was an abysmal failure on your part.
It's hard to argue, and I'll say this. One reason why you and I talked all off season about Tyler Bass, who was good today, probably should have been mentioned in my game ball segment, is because in the history of this sport, there are not many, if any, Super Bowl winners that have blown out their opponent 4 weeks in a row to win the Super Bowl. You have to be smart on the margins. You're not going to out-talent teams when you get that deep into the playoffs. And we've seen this Bills team now lose to the Chiefs by 3 points twice. And that's why we're nervous about leaving points on the field, on the field with Tyler Bass. And that's why, for as much as we appreciate Sean McDermott and the way he pulled this team out of the muck that was the playoff drought and turned this team into a perennial playoff contender, the expectations have gone up. You have a Josh Allen team right now, and you don't know how long that's going to last. Too many times in Sean McDermott's career, whether it's how he handled 13 seconds, whether it's how the team completely collapsed in Houston in his first road playoff loss, or I guess the second one, I want to forget the Jacksonville one, the Josh Allen's first playoff loss, or it's, you know, the fake punt with DeMar Hamlin against the Chiefs, or, you know, you can go down the list. He zigs when he should zag. He chooses door number one when door number two is the right answer. And when you're talking about getting deep into the playoffs and getting matched up with Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin and Sean McVay and John Harbaugh and like guys that just, when it comes to the big moment, they aren't going to beat themselves. Our coach too often beats himself, and it just has not gotten better. And it's very disappointing. And I don't know what at this point would give you hope that it would improve. My game check is going to be Curtis Samuel. And honestly, Luca, I feel like he embodies everything about the game check award, because he literally could have not gotten a jersey today and the result would have been no different.
Yep.
You could have had Tyrell Shavers run every route he ran, and maybe Tyrell Shavers would gain a yard. Who knows? But, you know, some love in this segment would go out to Josh Allen. He did not play particularly well. You know, you mentioned Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Joe Brady deserves a shout out in this case. I can't give it to anybody on the defense, man. They are down. When you talk about some of the dudes, they are down. Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, Von Miller. They played without Ed Oliver today. They played without Taylor Rapp. I mean, these guys are fighting their butts off, and they have given this team a shot every week but one.
And they allowed 6 points in the second half. Mm-hmm. Two field goals in a second half where it felt like hope was being lost before halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is impossible to even, you know, in this time, like I mentioned, Cole Bishop screwed up. It's on him for why Nico Collins's touchdown happened. Mm-hmm. That it's plain and simple. And Rasul Douglas shouldn't get blamed for that. Rasul Douglas is trusting what should be behind him and kind of supporting him in that moment. It wasn't there. You see them before Nico even crosses the line. Rasul, it's not like he's making an aggressive gesture, but he's talking to Cole Bishop immediately like, hey, dude, that's your moment to help me there. That is your job. And that stuff's going to happen, to your point, when you're down so many people that have been instilled with the job of being the starter in this defense, and you are now relying on his rookie's first career start at safety in this defense. You're relying on other backups and individuals that are either rookies or, you know, vets that aren't usual starters in positions to achieve a job that then you took a CJ Stroud, a prolific rookie passer who still did have a good day, but you held them to 6 overall points and gave your team the opportunities needed to go and win the game, and yet the offense couldn't do it. So as you said, just to kind of put a bow on it, no one on the defense deserves any blame for this game. They did exactly what you would like them to do. You would think that if you can hold CJ Stroud to even 23 points on offense, that Josh Allen in an offense with Josh Allen should be able to produce more than what they did and achieve more than just a hard grind of 20 points. It was very pathetic from an offensive side.
It sure was. And people that kept talking about the Chiefs as being a blueprint for getting rid of your best receiver and still winning a Super Bowl, leave out the fact that they had a all-world, all-elite defense, and they struggled with their passing game all season last year, and that is why they had to play 2 road games to get to the Super Bowl. You don't want to emulate the path they took. You want to emulate the result they got, but that is not a blueprint. All right, Luca. Let's talk about the topic that I think a lot of people are going to have this Monday when you're listening to it. There are moves out there to be made. The Bills currently do not have a lot of cap space, less than $2 million, depending on the site you're looking at. But some names that are intriguing to look at. We know Davante Adams is on the trade block, and it sounds like, according to insiders, you could see some movement on that this week. Another name to keep in mind is Amari Cooper. Now, he has not been officially put on the block, but the Browns season is going absolutely nowhere. He's in the last year of his deal. And they did a funny thing with his contract this offseason that actually made it tradable, where a team taking on Amari Cooper is only going to be responsible for less than $1 million against the cap, which means if you want to trade for Amari Cooper, it's probably going to be expensive pick-wise. Do either of those two names interest you? Are there any other names out there that interest you? Let's just be clear real quick. For Davante Adams to be realistic, the Bills don't have the cap space to take it on. What they would need to do is have the Raiders agree to convert his salary, which what the Bills would be responsible for, into signing bonus. That means when the Raiders trade him, they would still pay that against the cap, and then the Bills could get him for a minimal cap hit and then release him at the end of the year because he has no guarantees left. His salary is like $30 million next year, and you could release him for no hit against the cap. But for the Raiders, they'd have to basically write a check for $15 million. So you'd really have to make it worth their while draft pick compensation-wise. We know the Bills have a one. We know the Bills have two twos from the Diggs trade. And boy, that Vikings two is getting worse and worse as the weeks go on, although I'm glad they beat the Jets today. Would you be willing to part with one of those twos for Cooper or Adams? And how aggressively would GM Luka be going after one of these moves that, in all honesty, is going to be a player that's probably only here until the end of the season?
Oh, very aggressive. Very, 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 very aggressive. I think it's almost irresponsible not to. And the point I want to make is we talked about it already when talking about the receiving core, the weapons that you have surrounding Josh Allen. Yes, there was obviously the objective of kind of licking your wounds, trading away Diggs and eating the cap, dead cap that you're going to deal with this season, removing Gabe Davis, reshuffling the deck, eventually working it. And it felt like come next off season, we were going to have what seems like a lot of cap space and the ability then for the Bills to, you know, we were going to be able to see them maybe be more aggressive in trying to acquire new weapons or just all the things you feel like they need following the season, but can still get by. What you're experiencing now is it's quite more than that in the negative way. It's not good enough to get by. Josh Allen, as great as he is, needs support more than what you're providing him right now. And you have the opportunity to get a Davante Adams, which, yes, if you can make the money work, of course, is that big asterisk. But if you can make the money work and make the Raiders happy with the return package that doesn't feel like you're putting your future at stake, you go do it. And then Amari Cooper also, just quite simply, is an individual that I would be A-okay with. Because even Amari Cooper checks that box in my eyes where he's good enough and notable enough as a standalone player where it's like, we need to be aware of where Amari Cooper is on the field. And that's good. That's great. That would allow everything else to feel like it's sliding into place. And then on top of it all, if for whatever reason you sustain a Khalil Shakir injury, you could probably still get by okay. You need to do something that feels better than what we have right now. You have to do something. It is malpractice to not do something in my eyes. I just don't believe that Brandon Bean can be waking up tomorrow morning and feel, I mean, Brandon Bean's probably not going to sleep tonight. If this was me with my GM hat, I would be looking to make calls tonight to just gauge where things stand with the Raiders, with the Browns, things like that, and try to start mapping out the market on where these guys are and who's available and what you can do and so on and so forth. So I you have to do something right now. And yes, as you said, it could be what feels like, you know, in hockey terms, a rental move. You're trading for a guy in the season. He will be walking out of the door after the season. And that's just the way it is. But if that is the bridge thing that you need to do, it's absolutely worth, let's say, a 2 and a 5 in Davante Adams' sake, you know, just throwing out something blindly here. If you are telling me trade one of your 2s and a 5 to go get Davante Adams' services for a season, that can ultimately change everything for this team, for the offense, for Allen. And you should hopefully be able to take that and move forward without skipping a beat, where then you still can have the cap space after the season to address whatever you need to address moving forward as well. And that is a great position to be in at the cost of 2 measly draft picks or whatever it ends up being.
I would do it too. And I'm not somebody that just like sets picks on fire or says that willy-nilly. I certainly understand the value of having 2 second-round picks and it excites me, but I think it's a way to hybrid this thing. I know that the Bills are going into like the second wave of the Josh Allen era, But I think when you look at some of the bright spots they have this year with guys like Dorian Williams, you have Dwayne Carter looking good today. You have Khalil Shakir playing very well. Keon Coleman looks like he's going to be a good player in time. You know, I think it's a way to reset while also still being competitive. And I think it's also important to look around. The Jets do not look as good as we thought. They look very beatable. The Dolphins cannot get out of their own way, despite the fact that they're one game behind the Bills in the standings right now, having started Tyler Huntley and Skylar Thompson the last 3 weeks. One game, folks. The Chargers are a mess. They can't get healthy. The Chiefs just lost their best receiver last week after losing their second best receiver to start the season. And they're certainly going to be in the receiver mix. We say this a lot, but the AFC's kind of wide open this year. Imagine how badly you will kick yourself if you get to the playoffs and you lose a game like you saw today, where your defense keeps you in it, but your offense can't get out of their own way because nobody can get open. I think it makes way too much sense. I would be stunned knowing Brandon Bean if he's not doing everything he can to get this move done. We know he's an aggressive GM. The last time the Bills played in Houston and lost was a playoff game. That offseason, Brandon Bean hated his wide receivers so much that he went out and traded for Stephon Diggs. So I don't know why, Luca, it's written in stone that every time the Bills lose in Houston, it has to be painful. You have today. You have the playoff game. You have EJ Manuel's last start when they got rid of Kyle Orton, the J.J. Watt return. You have Josh Allen getting his first, was it this first UCL injury, and then Peterman comes in and throws the pick six at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Every single time they lose in Houston, it is a misery. Hope they go back there in January. The Bills can beat this team, but they got to get some weapons. These Bills, any final thoughts, Luca? This was a mess. Not the show. I think the show was fine. I think this week was a mess.
Yeah, the show could have been a mess too. It's okay.
Could have been.
No more thoughts. I mean, it's going to be a tough sleep. It's going to be kind of a tough start to the week. I mentioned it to you. I might've even said it earlier in the episode. I can't remember. This is one of the more miserable games I can recall, you know, in the Josh Allen era. And I say that because this was more miserable than the Denver game, because even at least in the Denver game, there was the hope of the win at one point. There was a thought that we were still going to win this game. Being at the game itself, Josh, I didn't think we were going to lose that game until, I mean, we lost it in the dying seconds because of the way that we did. It was a shock. I mentioned it was a funeral walking out of there. It was because of shock. In this one, it was a struggle. It was a slow bleed. I didn't believe in the offense. I didn't believe in Josh Allen being able to pull it out and get the win. I mentioned it when they had the ball at the 15. I truly did not believe. I didn't think that the Bills could even get the first and goal, let alone actually do anything by getting it in the end zone. And that is concerning. Yeah. That is a problem. And if I'm sitting at my home watching the Bills and seeing that and feeling that and thinking that, I'm not saying that Brandon Bean has to feel the same way, but it's hard for me to imagine a team that he has constructed and is in charge of, and that his job and livelihood depends on the success of, feels differently. I'd be shocked. I think he's probably in the same boat, and I am hopeful that we are going to have an interesting week on the X, formerly known as Twitter sphere. I think we're going to hear a lot of things, and I think there's things to be had out there. I will say it's a little bit of a bummer that the Broncos blew out the Raiders, so that therefore like a guy even like Cortland Sutton is not going to be available most likely, because that would be another name to like I would be intrigued by. But I'm very curious to see what hopefully Brandon Bean's going to try to do. Ultimately, is he going to be able to do something? No, that's hard to put that against him. Teams operate and do whatever they feel is best to their interest. I don't believe that the Bills necessarily are the team that's going to have the best thing available for one of these marquee players. But you bet your sweet ass that I think Amari Cooper wants the hell out of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. There is no chance he wants to deal with Deshaun Watson and whatever disaster is going on there. And how Stefanski still is going, dude, save your job. Save your job. Put Jameis in, for the love of God. As a football fan, Josh, I think we share a brain here where it's like, we want to enjoy football spectating. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson does not provide that for us.
He's so hard to watch.
It's painful. Amari Cooper wants out. Hey, Brandon Bean should get on that. But also, just side note here, please can we see Jameis Winston in for the Browns? I want to enjoy one more game of every football Sunday, because the Browns are not worth a damn minute of my time at this moment. Not worth a damn minute of anyone's time. It is miserable. It is terrible. Washington won that game as soon as the opening kickoff happened. It was over. So that's all I got to say.
And you feel sorry for that defense. They got some studs out there. Yeah. I know Stefanski came out after the game and said that Jameis Winston is not going to play. It's going to be Deshaun Watson. Yeah, I imagine that's coming from the top, the money they're paying him. You know, it is what it is. One note on Amari Cooper. He is a free agent after this season. Davante Adams is not a free agent, but his $30 million cap hit would make you have to release him. No guaranteed money, so you release him for free. The difference there is, if you release a player, you don't get a compensatory pick. If Amari Cooper comes here via trade and leaves and signs a contract elsewhere, the Bills could get back a third or fourth round pick in the compensatory formula the next year. So maybe you trade a two and something else, and you end up getting Amari Cooper plus a future three. So something to keep in mind. I mean, there's insurance on that deal, something to think about. One last thing, and you don't even have to respond to this if you want to. Greg Rousseau, is he the Gabe Davis of defensive ends, Luca, where at the end of the season we look at his stats, we're like, wow, Greg Rousseau had 8 or 9 sacks, but it's like they all came in 3 games.
Yeah.
I need more out of Greg Rousseau.
Yeah, it is quite simply as you're putting it. Yeah, it's concerning. I don't want to say that it's disrespectful to Greg Rousseau. He's still making some impactful plays, we'll call it. But it's like, dude, we need you to step up. We need you. This is the time. Rousseau, for all intents and purposes, is on the healthier side right now. And Von Miller's out now for another 3 games. Mm-hmm. We need you to step up. I found myself saying something in my living room as well, where I was like, I would love to see Javon Solomon get a little bit more go. It feels like right now, I'd love to see what he could provide. Cause the only time you saw him was almost touchdown saving tackle on special teams. He had, I think, on a kick return or punt. I don't know if it was kick or punt return, but he had a touchdown saving tackle there. And it's like, oh, look, it's Javon Solomon. Okay. He is dressed. He is healthy. He's right there. Let's sprinkle him in on the edge rush, huh? Let's put him in there in third and pass situations. Because Rousseau's not doing it. Epinesa's been MIA. I don't know what's going on there. So if you don't have Von Miller, who has been good, but unfortunately now has to serve the 3 more game suspension, it's like, let's do something here. Because, yeah, Greg Rousseau, he continues to be vanilla ice cream with a couple sprinkles on there.
What's your early confidence in this Jets game?
Oh, I'm confident.
Okay.
We'll talk. The Jets are as Fugazi gets. I mean, they are just, watching this game, watching the London game this morning, it was eye opening, where it felt like Rodgers was almost experiencing talking about Rodgers here, but he was having an out of body experience where he just couldn't believe what was going on and how it just continued not to click. And it wasn't working. And he was missing throws regularly. Yeah. That you're like, Rodgers doesn't miss that throw. Yeah. Rodgers of 2 years ago does not miss that throw. So it's, and Breece Hall, I actually think there's something wrong with him health-wise. He is not running the same.
There's gotta be. We like Braylon Allen, but holy cow, not that much.
Yeah. Like, Breece Hall had a run today, Josh, where it's a simple, you know, zone concept, one cut. He found a seam and go, and you could literally watch him round a cut. And it's like, okay, Breece Hall is rounding a cut upfield. What is going on that he's not confident enough to just bang, take that and explode and get a big play out of that, because that's what you would expect from him. So, yeah, there's something going on, but overall the Jets, I don't believe in them. Monitor the Sauce Gardner situation, monitor the Rodgers situation. Maybe Rodgers isn't even playing. I mean, he played the game and stuff, but I mentioned it to you off air. It's like he took that massive shot to his knee, and look, adrenaline and whatever else was pumping through him that could have been helping with the inflammatory stuff going on in his knee. When he wakes up tomorrow, is that knee still the same? Is the ankle still the same? What is going on there? If something swells up like crazy, that puts, I believe, Monday in serious doubt, because he is older. It takes, he's already acknowledged how it just takes longer in general to recover from these games due to his age. Now, all of a sudden you introduce that. Is it going to put that in jeopardy? Because then if you don't have Rodgers, Josh, yes, this Bills team lost to a Rodgerless Jets team to open the season last year. But boy, do I think they would not make that mistake twice.
Well, the Jets defense isn't as good as it's been. I think that's clear.
Yeah.
They aren't nearly as strong up front. Their linebackers are looking older. And I think we saw the Texans lock up the Bills today. Stingley's excellent, but like outside of that, Sauce Gardner and Reed can certainly stay with the Bills receivers. But in general, I don't think this is a Jets defense where you're just afraid to attempt a forward pass. I am curious, though, because this is not a Bills offense where you're afraid of their forward pass. So something has to give, and I am interested to see how the Jets do without taking the bye week after London and coming back and playing the next week. If you remember, last year the Bills did that against the Giants, and for 3.5 quarters, they looked totally out of sync, and then they ended up sneaking away with that win. So we shall see. There's a lot working in the Bills' favor in this game. You absolutely need Khalil Shakir back. Hopefully you get Ed Oliver back. Just get some dudes back. Maybe Taron Johnson comes back. Trade for Davante Adams. You know, all the stuff. And let's play the feud. All right, Luca. Next time they hear from us on Bills Chat will be Monday morning, which, based on the timeline, will be a New York Jets preview. Pre-game show? Why did I say preview? Pre-game show. But what's great about that is we'll have known the results from NFL Sunday. So not only will that game be for first place in the AFC East, we'll know the Dolphins have a bye. I don't care about the Patriots, but we'll know about the rest of the league. I'm sure there'll be some other injuries to talk about, some storylines. I enjoy the preview. It kind of takes us back to that Friday night feel that we've had before, where we can kind of break down an opponent in depth. And let's be honest, Luca, this is a massive game for both teams. Both team seasons are kind of spiraling, and it kind of speaks to the missed opportunity the Bills had today, because they really could have like jumped a couple steps ahead of the floundering AFC East opponents. And quite honestly, if the Bills lose next week, the Dolphins have survived the Tua injury, because they'll only be one game back with Tua coming back. So Bills got to find a way to win. They got to fix this. Get Khalil Shakir, get another wide receiver in the building, and get Joe Brady out of his head and find a way to call good offensive plays. That is their problem, not ours. We just have to be emotionally connected to it. We will talk to you next week. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will see you next week on Bills Chat.